Welcome to Silence the Mind Cluck. I'm your host, Maria T. Finch, and I'm super glad that you're here. Get ready to quiet that mind and reap the rewards.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome. I'm Maria Finch. I'm an inner intelligence coach. And today I'm thrilled to have Patrick Sanahan with me. Patrick, welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much, Maria. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, so nice to have you here. So to start out, tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I'm Pat Sanahan. I live in Doylestown, Pennsylvania, which is a small, pretty town about 30 miles north of Philadelphia. And I'm an organizational consultant that does a lot of work in the higher ed space in strategic planning and presidential transitions.
Oh, interesting. Okay, great. So tell us about a time in your life. Oh, excuse me. That's my dog. Tell us about a time in your life when you experienced an overwhelming amount of mind cluck.
Yeah, it's many years ago. I was writing my dissertation, but I wasn't writing it. I was reading it. And I kept on doing more and more research and more and research and then asking for extensions. And the chair of my committee said to Pat, you got to start writing this thing, not keep on doing research. So it was a form of procrastination, actually. And that's where, and I got overwhelmed because I only had a year to finish the book and feeling a lot under pressure. So I did one smart thing. I asked some other colleagues who had actually finished their dissertation, well, how did you do it? You know, they're smart people and they all got done. So I go to someone who's done it, and each one had a kind of a strategy that really helped them. And the three strategies, if I can say what they were.
Yeah, absolutely.
These really helped me. I finished it in a year and I've written 12 books with the same kind of process. And one of the people said that you have to make your success or your accomplishments visible.
Okay.
So she had a big checklist every time she finished a page or a paper or sat down for 30 minutes. She'd make a big check mark or cross something off so she could see it and feel that she's accomplished something. So making your progress visible is a very powerful notion. The second one was chewable chunks. I was convinced that I had to sit down for 3 and 4 and 5 hours at a time and just kind of pull it out. And they said, no. Take it for 30 minutes. Take a break. Come back and see what's going on. And it sounds so simple, but, I mean, that's something that's enabled me to do a lot of writing over the years. Every 30 minutes, I take a little bit of a break for about 10 minutes and come back. And that way I can do about 5 or 6 hours of writing or reading, whatever it is. And then the last one, and this is something I kind of fought a little bit, was rewards work. And I said to myself, well, shouldn't I be mature enough or strong enough or disciplined enough to not need rewards? And they said, no, rewards really work, Pat. So you got to figure out, what do you like to do? If that's a latte, if that's a walk with a friend, it's going to a movie or a special dinner, whatever those things are. We all have different things that we like.
Yeah.
After you've accomplished something, make sure you reward yourself. So those three strategies are, that's almost a book on procrastination. Those three strategies will get you through a lot of hard times.
Yeah, that is amazing. So let's go a little further into each strategy, because I think, like, hearing those, it's like, well, oh, of course, but it's also so easy to not do those things.
Yes.
So how do you make, like, let's go strategy by strategy. What are your tips for making that particular strategy, like, doable and automatic?
Yeah, I think the key is that to do one thing. Not all three. I didn't really get facile with those three strategies right away.
Yeah.
I said, well, okay, well, let me do chewable chunks. And I did that for about a month. And I realized, geez, I'm getting a lot of writing done for a change instead of reading.
And so let me. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
No. Doing one thing. And then after that, I listened to the other thing about the making my progress visible. And what I still use this today, Post-its. And I have Post-its on a wall. And every time I've done my 30-minute chunk, I go over to the wall and I take off the Post-it and I crimple it up, and it makes it feel like you hit a home run. It's beautiful. You have to stand up, get the Post-it, crinkle it up, throw it in the trash can, sit down and begin to work again. So as you see your progress, it's pretty exciting. So that was the second one. It took me about a month or so.
Okay.
And then the third one was, like I said, I resisted the rewards thing, but boy, rewards really work. So and there's research to show all these things. I mean, and I did the third one. So in about 3, maybe 4 months, I was able to do those three strategies. And one at a time, I think, is the key. Instead of, a lot of times people try to do 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 things, and it just doesn't work. So do one thing really well, then a second one, and maybe a third one. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. So for chewable chunks, this is something I know there are a lot of different methods out there for how to approach that and how much time you should be working versus how much time you should be relaxing. What's your perspective on that? And when you're taking a break, what do you do that recharges you and enables you to come back and be productive?
That's a great question, because in the 30 minutes, I started out for an hour, and then right around 45 minutes, I'd start, you know, thinking about other things and my mind would wander. So I honed it down to 30 minutes. And you don't want to do an hour. 30 minutes is a big chunk of time. You can get a lot of things done there. And I think that it's really important to take your time with that. But what you don't want to do during the break is go on social media. And there's a big temptation with that, because you get on there and then 3 hours later you go, oh boy, that was fun and I didn't learn anything. But so what I usually do is do something generative. I take a walk in I have a beautiful backyard, take a walk in the backyard. Listen to some music. I might read a little bit of fun stuff, not just the research stuff and things like that. I try to make my breaks relaxing and something to look forward to. But if you get on social media like Facebook, nothing wrong with Facebook or LinkedIn. I mean, I'm on those things, but you can get distracted, and distraction is dangerous.
Well, and the other thing that I've noticed for myself is that if I get on Facebook or LinkedIn or whatever, and I start reading things, it's not relaxing at all. I don't find it to be relaxing. I find that, you know, maybe I'm reading things that are somehow related to my work. So in essence, I'm still working. Or, you know, if you could sculpt your feed so that it would only be like happy, fun things, that's one thing. But often it's not. And so you're really just working more. Whereas I always argue that it's really good to get up and move in some way. So get up, and even if you just walk around your house or you know, go like just walk outside, walk around the block. It's not like you have to do anything major, but just to take yourself away from your screen, especially so you're giving your eyes a break. And for me, I always find going outside really does it, because it's like you go outside and you're like, oh yeah, look at the whole world, feel the fresh air, see the flowers, and you know, whatever. It like changes my mindset right away.
Absolutely. No, being around nature, and there's a lot of research that shows that it really kind of relaxes people, and it gets you away from what you're focusing on. And then a lot of times you'll get some creative ideas when you're not thinking about exactly what you're focused on. So
yeah,
doing something constructive. And at the end of the day, I'll do my emails. You know, I mean, I do very early in the morning, I look at emails, and very late in the afternoon, but I don't do it every 15, 20 minutes, which a lot of people that I work with are always checking their emails. And it's a, you know, it's just a distraction machine. You gotta use it, not have it use you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something that I argue that I say about my phone. I say, I am the master of my phone. So I turn the sound off often when I don't want to be disturbed, when I really want to concentrate. It's like, I'm not available. So I'm not going to look at texts. I'm not going to answer calls. I'm just taking time away from it. If you start doing that, it's so powerful, because you realize how often we get distracted by our stupid phones.
The average adult touches their phone 250 times a day.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. That's
a lot of times, right? And so
it is.
If you can take your phone and put it in another room, or put it on silent for like 15 minutes, once you can kind of build yourself up, you say, well, I'll do it for an hour. A lot of people, it's very, very hard.
Yeah.
And do 15-minute increments, and then maybe 3 weeks, you can do it for an hour. But you're right, you're using your phone really effectively.
Yeah. I really like your post-it method. That's not one that I've heard before, because I'm a list person, so I love crossing things off a list. But I like the idea of a post-it, because that's almost a better display. You get the better feeling of like, oh, I've gotten this done.
Yep. And the person that told me, and I went to his office, and he has his post-its on the wall, and he has to get up from his desk. That's the physical part of it.
Right.
And cross over and grab that post-it. And I said, that works for you? He says, Pat, you won't believe it. And I tried it the next day, and it was a wonderful feeling. And then as you get lower in your post-its, you begin to feel, hey, I'm turning the corner here. I'm almost done. It's visceral. It's physical. It's visual. It's just a nice little technique.
And when do you write your post-its for the date? Do you do that first thing in the morning? Do you do it the night before?
I do it first thing in the morning.
Okay. Yeah,
nighttime, as I'm getting a little older, I only try to do a few things at nighttime to kind of structure my day. But you're exactly right. If you can do it ahead of time, that's a smart thing to do. So I'll give you a quick example if I can.
Yeah.
So I try to walk 10,000 steps a day. I can't run anymore because, you know, I got a little old. And today's a rainy day. So it'd be very easy for me to kind of go, oh, boy, let me just have another cup of coffee and read the paper. And, you know, maybe the rain will pass. And that's not a good thing, a good place to be. Excuse me.
Sure.
And so what I have is I put all my clothes in one spot that I need and get up in the morning, do a few things, go to the spot. Within less than a minute, I got everything I need to go out the door. So I don't even have to think about it. I build a routine, And yeah. I've done about 10,000 steps a day consistently about 95% of the time. Just with that routine. But setting it up the night before is the key.
Yeah. So going back to the post-it, the reason why I was wondering about writing them out the night before, I mean, I totally understand that for some people, like, it's just not practical. But one way that it could be helpful is if you're going to be running your to-do list in your head when you're trying to go to sleep, if you've already post-its out, then you don't have to think about it. So it's another way to just take something out of your mind. So your mind's not clucking at you going like, oh, don't forget to do this. Don't forget to do that. You're like, nope, it's all on the post-its. I can go to sleep.
Yep. That's a great idea. It's always good to have an idea catching system because if it's running around your head, it's an attention grabber. So, I mean, I do my agenda every afternoon for the next day and I leave some space open. If something's a surprise, but that's a practice I've had for 30 years. My agenda the night before or the afternoon before. I know exactly what I'm supposed to do after my walk.
Yeah. And now let's talk a bit more about rewards. So what level of accomplishment do you give yourself before you, like, what level of accomplishment do you feel like you need to achieve before you earn yourself some sort of a reward? Like, how do you build that system?
Yeah, that I think that's very personal. I mean, some people can say, hey, I'll go on vacation in a year as a reward for finishing the project or finishing the book.
Right.
I would say, hey, how about after every chapter, you might go with a dinner with a friend or go down to the ocean to spend a day as opposed to waiting to the very, very, very end. So I would do some, you know, some intermittent mini deadlines with some rewards. I mean, you don't want to reward yourself just for 30 minutes of work. Unless you can't do 30 minutes of work, then that's an achievement. But at the end of the day, I have some things that I have set up that if I've done my 5 hours of hard, you know, research and writing, I have a little reward for myself. And I try to make sure there's a variety of different rewards so I don't run out of good ideas.
And how do you plan that? So, like, do you have in mind that if I finish this chapter, then I'm going to do X? Or how do you approach that?
Absolutely. Finishing a chapter is a big achievement. Mm-hmm. And it's a big achievement because that's one big step.
Yeah.
All it's a book is, it's just a collection of chapters.
Right.
And I usually do something. I like the ocean a lot. Uh-huh. And I live about an hour and a half from the ocean. So it's a real, you know, I just can't walk out my door and be on the ocean. I have to get in the car. I have to plan for it. But anytime I finish a chapter, I usually go down to the Jersey Shore. I'm not too far from the Jersey Shore. And I've lived down there back in the day. And I spend the day either walking. I might go and have a drink someplace, really, and kind of enjoy myself. I might visit Atlantic City. I don't do gambling, but Atlantic City is still an exciting place. But it's something I really kind of look forward to and something that charges me up.
And do you ever give yourself a reward during the day?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. One thing, I used to have 10 things on my to-do list. And then a buddy of mine said, well, why do you have 10 things? I said, well, I think that's what you're supposed to do, aren't you? And he says, I only have about 5.
Yeah.
Said, really? And he's a very productive guy. I said, really? He said, yeah. So what I do is I have 5 now, and then I have a 6th one in case something kind of pops up. And then, you know, I'm not encouraging other people, but then I tend to like Pinot Noirs and Chardonnays. At the end of the day, I relax and I'll have a Pinot Noir or a Chardonnay, and I fill in my comments and I have a little, wine book, as it were. I also like lattes. I'll have a latte at the end of the day. I also have a place nearby here, which is a little nature spot, that I kind of tend to go to walk around and just kind of enjoy myself. So I try to do those kinds of little things.
Okay. And then are you thinking about that as like, this is a reward? Like, I'm working towards this reward? Because I'm trying to think for our audience, for anyone who's feeling really stuck and is like, well, sure, that sounds great to work, you know, for 5 or 6 good hours in a day, but like, no way could I do that. So I'm wondering, you know, if you start out, I like the idea of having fewer post-its to begin with, and maybe you make them your top priorities.
Absolutely. absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, I use the post-its for time at task.
Okay.
Like, tasks like finishing a chapter. So, but I still will have 10 post-its, 30 minutes each and 10 minute breaks.
So okay.
Yeah. It's not just the, now that's another way to do that. You can have your post-its and have your agenda up there. And every time you finish that, kind of rip that up. I mean, that's another way of doing it.
Yeah.
But the rewards are, like I said, they're very personal. Make them small.
You know, that right.
Could be a bite of candy. It could be a piece of cake. It could be a nice cup of tea. It could even be meditation for some people. Just a
right. Meditation. Right. I think that's so important. I mean, one of the things that I think is really important about taking breaks and about rewards is making sure that it's something that recharges you in some way. Right. And everybody, for everyone, that's different. You know, for me, it's always being outside. Like that gives me energy every time I walk out the door. But figuring out what really gives you energy and then what would serve as a good reward is a really useful practice, I would say.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it'd be good to make sure you have, I call it a reward map. You need to have lots of variety in your rewards so that you have something to look forward to. So, you know, variety is really helpful. It's very motivating.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I think about this for myself. Like sometimes I'll be like, oh, I'm going to make a really creative sandwich for lunch or something. Yeah. Like it can be that silly where it's like, okay, if I finish this particular task, then I'm going to go make myself a delicious lunch. Like that, and I treat it like a reward. And so it does give me motivation to stay focused.
Absolutely. And it's fun. It's creative too. You're making a sandwich and you're smelling all the things you're putting into it and then you taste it. That's a home run.
Yeah. Yeah. So for somebody who's listening and is just thinking like, I am just stuck in I am stuck in procrastination. I procrastinate all the time. What's your advice to them? Like, how do you start getting yourself out of procrastination?
Well, what the research shows very strongly is that self-criticism doesn't help.
Yeah.
Like, I should be doing this, and how come I'm not mature enough, and hop up, 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 all that kind of crap. It just keeps the procrastination cycle going.
Yeah.
So the self-criticism is something you have to get rid of. And I think that's a big step in the right direction. Also, with at least the procrastination cycle, what happens is there's usually a task you don't want to do. And you either get overwhelmed with it or anxious about it or get stressed out about it. And the minute you step away from the task, delay doing it, all those emotions disappear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's the powerful habit of procrastination. That took me a long time to figure that out. Usually I feel very good when I step away from a task I don't want to do. Oh, and that's self-reinforcing. And one of the big strategic wedges there is meditation.
Uh-huh. Because
in meditation, and once again, people say, oh, I'll meditate for 30 minutes. If you do 10 minutes of meditation a day, you're in the top 1% in the world. I mean, just do 10 minutes of meditation can slow you down a little bit and watch your thoughts and not be reacting to your thoughts. And that's the key, I think, the key wedge around procrastination.
Yeah, that makes sense. So when you get thoughts that are bothering you, what do you do?
I try to pay attention to them and just let them go and say, that's just a thought. I don't have to react to my thought. And I think the meditation, I do that every day. The meditation has helped me, you know, I don't know if it's the right word is discipline. It has taught me that I don't have to react to my thoughts and my feelings.
And how long has it taken you to develop that skill? Because I think that's something that everybody shoots for, but I think it's very hard to do.
Yeah. Well, I think when I first started doing the research on this topic as the word procrastination, I think I was a pretty hard driving person. And I just wasn't being smart about a few things. And I had different colleagues that meditated for many years. And so I said, does that work for you? And they said, absolutely. And so I've tried to build that into my life. And it's I know it's relaxed me, and this notion of not having to react to your thoughts is a powerful notion. And 10 minutes a day.
It is. And so let's give our audience an example. Can you come up with a thought and then how you would choose not to react to it? Can you make that into an example?
Yeah, I don't like doing things with detail work, like income taxes.
Okay.
It's dready. I dread doing my income taxes. And I also dread doing my billing and my invoicing. Everything else in my career, I love. I love what I do, and I'm all over the place and very successful.
Yeah.
But those are two things I still struggle with. Right? I still struggle with.
Okay.
And one of the things that your folks might do is something called temptation bundling.
Okay.
And temptation bundling is when you take something noxious or something uncomfortable or aggravating, and you marry it with something that you like to do.
Ah, okay. So
clean the house, which is something, you know, I'm not too enthused about. I play a certain kind of music.
Okay.
When I'm doing my income tax returns or I'm doing my invoicing, I usually watch TV, and I don't watch much TV, but I watch sports because I like sports a lot.
Okay.
And it just relaxes me. I enjoy it, and I do a little bit of work. Watch the show, do a little bit of work. It takes me 2 and 3 times as long, but I get done. And that's the key. I get done. So people have these weird mini deadlines in their head. I should be able to do this at the end of the day. Yeah. And we're over aspirational. And it might take me 3 or 4 days to do the income tax return because it's pretty complicated because I go in different states. But I get it done. And many years ago, I had to pay a few penalties, you know, like get extensions and then even get penalized.
Yeah,
I had about three years in a row. So you're giving the government. And then what is it? Something like 32% of people do their income tax the night before, right? Oh. So it's something that you can work at it. And so I haven't paid any penalties in over 20 years. So that's my scorecard.
So I like that. So temptation bundling. So bundling an unpleasant task with something that you enjoy doing.
Right. If you don't like to exercise, find a friend, take a walk together, take a run together. I mean, if you can make it a social activity or bundle it with something that's positive, you'll usually be able to get motivated to move forward. And there's another important point. And once again, I'm coming at this with a kind of a procrastinator's perspective. Yeah. But a lot of people think that they have to feel motivated. Well, I don't feel like doing it, Pat. Uh-huh. And that has nothing to do with doing it. You don't have to feel I never feel motivated to do my income tax return ever.
Yeah.
You're not waiting. You have to have some strategies in place like temptation bundling or making, you know, rewards or making your progress visible because you're never going to feel like it. And a lot of creative people, and I'm writing a book on creativity, it's fascinating. They have certain routines that they do over and over and over again. They don't wait for some kind of motivation or some deep insight to strike them, to get them be creative. They work at it every day. Does that make sense?
It does. I mean, I'm a creative person and for me, actually working on anything creative is how I lock on and I get into my flow and I can kind of go for hours. And then I look up and I'm like, oh gosh, where am I? What, you know, I haven't eaten, whatever. So for anyone, and I really argue that everybody is creative. I think that it just isn't fostered enough and people don't identify it as creativity. Absolutely. But I think anytime when you're making something, you're writing something, there's so many different ways you can be creative in your cooking. You can be creative in the way you clean your house. Absolutely. There's so many opportunities for creativity. And I think creativity actually makes things more enjoyable as well.
Absolutely. I think one of the myths that people have is that I'm not a creative person because we're thinking about a painter or a ballet dancer or a poet, which I'm none of those things. But I'm a practical creative. I get things done every day and I accomplish a lot. And once you know that everyone's creative, you got single parents, they do 3 different jobs. They're very creative problem solvers. So yeah, we all creative. There are certain people who are artistically creative and that's different. That's not something that appeals to me or something I have a facility with. But I know every day I'm doing something that's practical and creative at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. And I think just even paying attention to that can be inspiring because then you're like, oh, well, you know, you can make it fun. You can make things fun by looking at it through a lens of creativity.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely. Everyone's creative. We're just creative in different ways.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So any other, what other tips do you have like temptation bundling? Do you have more things like that you can share with our audience?
A couple quick things, sure. One of the things you have to be very conscious of is, especially in our culture, is more is better. Uh-huh. And the more choices we have, the more opportunities we have. And what we know from the research is that's not a very good idea. Mm-hmm. And then if you can come up with, and there's a good book called The Paradox of Choice. And the guy who wrote it was a guy named Schwartz.
Okay.
He found that if you have 3 good choices, that's all you need. Uh-huh. And this whole notion of fear of missing out, keep on piling up and piling up and piling up. And then people, it's like New York City. New Year's resolutions, 92% of people fail by the end of the month because we're too aspirational. So if you can come up with three choices, if something you do, it could be a vacation, it could be a hobby, it could be whatever it is. That's hugely important instead of 9, 10, 11, or 12. And the other thing, too, is it's really important that willpower has got a lot of mythology about willpower, that somehow I should be tough enough to kind of punch it out. And a lot of that's sports, and I'm a big sports nut, but those are people who are paid to do one thing very well and paid a lot of money to do it very well.
Yeah.
Willpower is a very limited resource. It's like a battery that runs out pretty quickly. And so you don't have a big bucket of willpower. You have about a thimbleful. And how you have to use your willpower, I think, is strategically. And what I need to do when I'm doing whatever I'm doing is towards the end, the last mile for me is the hardest. Beginning things is not hard for me. Getting in the middle is not hard for me. I kind of enjoy it. But right, the very last end is hard for me. And that's when I have to really use my willpower strategically and punch through it. Some people just getting started is a challenge. They need to use their willpower, which once again is very limited, and to be able to start. And starting is the key to getting things done. Just start for 5 minutes or 10 minutes and see what happens.
Right. And so when people are thinking about their willpower, how do you characterize that? Like for someone who's listening and says, well, wait a minute, I don't really know what I do with my willpower. How would you approach that?
Can you persist through a difficult task?
Okay.
Is that losing weight? Is that writing? Is that, you know, doing the laundry? Can you persist, not enjoy, can you persist with a difficult task? And that's when I think willpower is helpful, but I can't stress enough, this is the research, that it's a very limited resource. So that's why temptation bundling kind of comes in. That can be a nice little technique that you can use to help you punch through something and use your willpower.
Okay. That's awesome. Well, so we're getting towards the end of our time, and I wanted to ask if there are any last words of wisdom or anything else that you'd like to share with our audience before we sign off.
Yeah, I think that if you're tired, people have different energy cycles during the day.
Yes.
And I get up at 6 o'clock every morning, and I usually run out of steam. That doesn't mean I really can't concentrate and be effective around 4 o'clock. So after 4 o'clock, I really can't do something that's a cognitive task and really be at the top of my game or do something even physical.
Right.
And so you got it. About 80% of us are what they call larks, and 20% are something in the name of it, but it's the people at nighttime.
Night owls.
That's owls. Yeah, that's all right. And you got to play your game when it's best for you to play it, because a lot of people, let's say 20% of the population at 8 o'clock in the morning aren't at their full charge. That doesn't kick in until 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And that's when they have to really kind of apply their energy where their energy is in a very positive way. And the last thing I would say, and I mentioned it earlier, the self-criticism, and this is what the research shows very strongly, is not a good idea. It does not help. It makes things worse. So beating yourself up for not doing it, every day is another opportunity to do something that's important to you and not to beat yourself up. So that would be that probably be the biggest thing I'd like to communicate.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and adding on to that, I would say on this podcast and in everything I produce, everything I do is about silencing mind cluck, because that self-criticism, it's all mind cluck. And there are a bazillion different techniques you can try to quiet your own mind. Each of us is different. And so, you know, for you, meditation really works. Meditation works well for me too. Meditation works for lots of people. If you haven't tried meditation, go for it. but there are so many other techniques, and to quiet those voices that don't serve you well, I agree, is just so important, because it can hold you back from getting something done. There are times when I will have so much mind cluck about getting something done, and then I use my willpower and I actually do it. And then I'm like, oh, that wasn't really so bad.
Well, yeah, usually that's what happens. If you can start it, you go, oh, that 10 minutes, that wasn't too bad. Let me see another 10 minutes. So exactly. Yeah. Once you get into the experience, it's not, our brains make things a lot bigger, a lot more noxious than they need to be. But you're right. Starting is the key. If you can start something, you might keep it rolling.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Patrick, for everything you shared here. Really appreciate all of this. And for our audience, we'll have links to connect with Patrick. And is your book out yet or not yet?
Yes. Yeah, it's out.
It is out. Okay.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Tell us about your book.
The book is How to Be a Better Procrastinator.
Oh, okay.
The assumption behind that is that I think it's something that lives with you I mean, 25% of the population are chronic procrastinators. I mean, that's tens of millions of people. Yeah. But everyone procrastinates about something.
Yeah.
And what I do is come up with about 101 strategies on how to manage your capacity, not cure it, but to manage it. And it's very accessible, very practical, research-based, and people have used them and they know that they work.
All right. Wonderful. Well, we will definitely have a link to your book in the show notes.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, Patrick, thank you for joining us. Okay, everyone. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Thanks for listening. If you found this content helpful, please like, comment, and share across your social media. Are you sick of Mind Clock clocking up your days? Book a free initial consult with me at mindclock.com and let's silence it. Thanks and have a great week.